Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news with Willem van Denderen shortly, and as always, during the show, we'll be joined by our former ITN journo turned pundit, Derek Dyson. Now, the A-League men's competition kicks off this weekend. We'll talk to Simon Hill from 10 Paramount with the clubs in their second season of running the competition and the new broadcasting deal underway. There are big expectations that domestic football will begin to deliver on the promise those who love the game have craved for generations. Simon is always forthright, so it will be interesting to hear what he has to say and perhaps make some notes on his predictions for the postseason post-mortem. As always, Willem will bring us the latest news on the Socceroos and Matildas and other players on the international stage. Then we'll look back on what really has been a disastrous three games for the Socceroos in World Cup qualifying with the Asian Games. Paul Williams, 2 points from nine on offer, and instead of vying to take top spot, we're now in third spot and our fate pretty much out of our hands. And of course, we'll wrap it up with our extended stoppage time with Derek and look at other confederations where there are plenty of other big stories of qualification and teams on the brink. But I mentioned the campaign so far. Before we talk to Paul Williams, we are going to talk to a certain man who's just landed in Bangkok, who was there in Sharjah. We saw him on the TV footage the other night. Michael Edgley, how are you?
Hello, Rob. Great to be with you. Yes, I've just arrived in Bangkok after being in the Middle East for some weeks with my work in Qatar and the UAE, and I had an opportunity to see the Socceroos. And what was a very disappointing outcome for the Socceroos, all we can say is that 2 points from the last nine up for grabs is not what we needed. There is real pressure on this group now to do what they can. You said fate's not in our hands. Well, it is actually in our hands if we win against.
I did think on those words before I put them out. But when Japan are the team that gets to beat us, then my interpretation is that the fate is in their hands, so to speak. So I know it's a fine point, but I concede that it's one that you could argue.
Well, we should beat Vietnam at home, and that Oman game in Muscat will be very tricky, but that is a winnable game. And then obviously all roads will lead to Sydney when Japan comes down to play us. And if we beat Japan, we'll get on top. And don't forget also, we're only 1 point behind Japan. We have a very good goal difference against Japan as well. So maybe a draw against Japan will get us on top of that. But then we had obviously the road to Jeddah. I understand that the Saudi game is going to be in Jeddah, not Riyadh. So that's an interesting development too for the Socceroos. But yeah, look, it was disappointing. The players were devastated after the game. I think they understand the significance of letting that game slip. And really, until the VAR penalty came out of the blue, they didn't really look terribly dangerous going forward, China. And we seem to be cruising, but you just can't rely on one goal these days, can you? You need more than that, and we can't convert goals, and that's a big problem for us.
Michael, I've got two questions for you. The first one is, I think I've cut to the core of why the side lost. There was only a few Australian fans in the stands there in Sharjah, and after Mitch Duke's fifth goal of 2021, the camera did pan to you, and instead of being up on your feet, you were in your chair clapping your hands. Get up and give it some.
I was. Well, I had been standing up just before that, Willem, but the camera just wasn't quick enough to get my agile-like movement in the grandstand. Yeah, but it was, look, for me, China let Ryan Grant and Aziz Bache have the ball all night. They were congesting the corridor of Australia's attack, and we just didn't do enough when we had the ball in good positions. We just didn't do enough. We weren't creative enough, and we didn't create enough chances to give us an opportunity to score more than one goal. So, yeah, I think that's there's a lot to think about for the coaching staff. Don't forget, they're a little bit depleted. We don't want to make excuses for them. They were a little bit depleted in terms of talent out of that first team. And the depth that the squad has is a real challenging time. The squad's in a major transition, and we just have to get a result against Vietnam and see if we can get this campaign back on track.
I thought there was a lot of really harsh criticism of the team after the Saudi Arabia game. I actually think they played pretty well, and that's a night where you could bemoan the lack of a true natural finishing striker. That was the sort of game where Tim Cahill would usually make the difference for us, and that's not just who's available to the Socceroos. That goes back to having a 12-team senior men's competition with foreigners, and most teams will spend a marquee spot on a striker, so we don't have enough young strikers playing. So that's a bigger issue, but yeah, I don't think you could bemoan that against China. Way too slow building up from the back, and pretty sterile, unimaginative ball movement going into the box. Nobody really tried to play through the lines. I thought they were very disappointing. Edge, let's have a look at the rest of the World Cup qualifiers. Let's tick over to Group A. Iran and South Korea, they're marching towards Qatar after extending their third round unbeaten runs. Iran remain top after wins over Lebanon and Syria, while South Korea edged the UAE, then put three past Iraq away. All of the UAE, Iraq, Lebanon and Syria remain live chances for the third place playoff. The UAE at the moment, Michael, hold that spot by a point. So the third place playoff is now something that's very much part of what should be our future considerations, considering that very tough window we've got coming up in the final couple of games where we host Japan and then we go away to Saudi to play the hardest game of the group last. Michael, that third place playoff this time around, though, unlike in 2017, is going to be a single match before the as yet undetermined cross-confederation clash.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be UAE for me. They've got the better draw on the run home in the last four games. They have a much more talented pool of players than I think Lebanon, for example, who's close enough to them. So I think it'll be UAE. And I hear, it hasn't been confirmed, but I understand the AFC is about to make an announcement that the higher seeded team will host the playoffs. So if Australia does come up against UAE or Lebanon in those games, that'll be a game that we'll play in Australia. And then it goes into the barrel, doesn't it? And we could be looking, you know, if you looked at CONCACAF, Willem, we could be playing any one of Mexico, Panama, United States, or Canada. It's so close, CONCACAF, if we were to get drawn out the team there. And obviously, we want to avoid South America, don't we? Because that's a horror show waiting for us, either Uruguay or Chile, you would think. And maybe the old chestnut OFC could come our way and we could play New Zealand. So there's a lot to look forward to if we finish third. But let's hope the Socceroos can beat Vietnam. We can get a good away win against Oman and set up a blockbuster against Japan.
Yeah, we've got plenty of... we're going to wrap up pretty much every single World Cup qualifier across the course of the show, but there's a few more confirmed nations that have booked their tickets to Qatar. An additional 10 over the past window have joined Qatar, Germany and Denmark. So in South America, Brazil and Argentina have booked their tickets with four matches to spare, while another eight European nations qualified as group winners. Of the eight World Cup winners, only Italy and Uruguay remain in the cold, while the Netherlands will also return after missing out on Russia. And Rob, I'll put my hands up for now. Louis van Gaal, well done to him. I didn't think I thought he was the man. I thought they'd get qualified. What they do from here, I'm not overly confident of, but he showed a lot of resolve. He was riding a bike a couple of days before the clash, a very typically Dutch thing to do. He's come off, and at 70 years old, he's fractured his hip. So he coached the final win over Norway from a golf buggy. So well done to Louis, and good luck to him going forward. But it was hairy, Rob, that group. They were playing Norway, and the loser would have bombed not only out of first, but into third. So it was nil all at 84 minutes, but the Dutch put on a couple of late goals. So Norway are out, Holland are through. Let's move on. The investigation into the attack on French footballer Kira Hamraoui has taken a twist, with initial suspect Aminata Diallo cleared. The primary suspect is now Hayat Abidal, wife of former France and Barcelona defender Eric. Reports from France have strongly inferred Hamraoui and Abidal had a relationship, with Hamraoui's phone registered under Abidal's name. Mr. Abidal will now face police questioning. Michael, that is one hell of a twist. This story, certainly, well, I think there are a lot of people across the world who owe Aminata Diallo some sort of apology. She was convicted before she'd even set foot in the police's questioning booth, and it looks very much so that this was an attack around an affair rather than competition on the football field.
Well, I've been following the story, and it just continues to shock and awe, doesn't it? That I can't imagine the change room discussion before the PSG women's team trained would be interesting, wouldn't it? It'd be a huge distraction to them. And, I just hope that I hope the police find out the true perpetrator of this crime, and obviously they're dealt with appropriately under French law, but there's nothing to say other than it's just shocking, isn't it, Rob?
No, absolutely. And I guess ultimately the storyline shifts from one person who was inappropriately maligned. And as Willem said, we're part of that whole pile on, then we acknowledge our part in that as well. But it's still the same story ultimately, isn't it? That it's just a shocking football story of a player being injured through pure selfish malice and bizarre behaviour.
Fortunately, it doesn't look like the injuries are too serious or injury-threatening. Hamraoui's made it pretty clear that she intends to make a full recovery and return to the pitch. A final one, Rob. Premier League chief Gary Hoffman will step down at the end of January following an unhappy 18 months in charge. Hoffman wore heavy backlash from clubs over Newcastle's recent takeover, and prior to that was criticised for his apparent knowledge of talks regarding the European Super League. Hoffman was the first permanent chairman of the Premier League following Richard Scudamore, and Scudamore was such a pillar of strength for so long, he basically overhauled the entire English game, certainly at the top level. So those types of figures are hard to replace. We've seen it at clubs. I suppose you could draw some sort of comparisons with Arsene Wenger and Alex Ferguson over the past few years. These types of people are hard to replace. And for Gary Hoffman, as I said, an unhappy 18 months will come to an end.
After the break, Willem and I talking to Simon Hill, and Edge will be back in the not too far distant future on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box, and as we said off the top of the show, the A-League men's competition kicks off this weekend with the clubs in their second season of running the show and the new broadcasting deal underway. There are big expectations that domestic football is going to deliver on the promise that we've craved for so long, and our good friend Simon Hill with Ten and Paramount Plus joins us. How are you, Simon?
Very good, guys. How are you?
Yeah, mate, all the better for speaking to you, and looking forward to the first ball being kicked in anger on Friday evening. So to get us off the mark, Simon, there are obviously major expectations. The clubs had lobbied for a long, long time. They're now in their second season of running the competition. Any excuses around logistics and planning and organisation are starting to dissipate. COVID, well, it's not a memory, but it's in the background. We're expecting crowds in stadiums, and we've got Channel 10 and Paramount Plus broadcasting. So tell us what, as a viewer, the A-League fan is expecting to see that is going to look a little different. And also, what under the broadcasting arrangements that are now in place that general sports fan should expect to see to bring them into the fold, and let's say the Euro snob who shows no interest, how are we going to get them involved?
Blimey, Rob, that's a very multi-layered question.
Multi-layered, but you're a multi-layered man, Simon, and I know you've got a very great capacity to respond to it.
Well, I'll do my best. look, I don't know whether we're going to, try and reinvent the wheel. It's still about the product on the pitch. And the players and the clubs have to deliver on that. We will try and showcase it in the best possible way that we can. I think what you've already seen with Network 10 is that, football is going to be a priority for them. They don't have a lot of other sports, so, they can invest almost wholly in the success of this competition. We're seeing, the sort of cross-reference and across mainstream programming such as Have You Been Paying Attention, The Project, MasterChef with Archie Thompson on it. As soon as the Melbourne Cup race was finished, you saw a minute advert for the new A-League season. That's gold dust for our sport. We haven't had that before. So I think that's, from the broadcast side of things, that obviously we'll cover all the games, and no doubt there'll be support programming and written articles and everything else. You've already seen that the clubs have set up this new site called Keep Up, which is going to offer even more in-depth stuff on both the A-Leagues, men's and women's, and overseas. So I think, everything's in place. It's dependent upon the conversion of hearts and minds, as we've been saying for about 40, 50 years. We've got to get people involved with the A-Leagues, men's and women's, get them coming out to games in bigger numbers, get them watching on television in bigger numbers. And that's not always an easy process. You know, a lot of people are rostered on fans of other clubs overseas or other sports within Australia. It takes time. But we've, you know, in the past, we've sort of almost been there and slipped away. And we cannot keep messing up. You know, this is a big, big chance for football. And everything's in place, as you rightly said. You know, the clubs now have control. There's money in the kitty. Rumours of more coming in from private investment via Silver Lake. I don't quite know when that's going to be finalised. So, you know, this is our best chance. And we've had opportunities before, but we simply have to take this one. Because if we don't, there might not be another one. Simple as that.
Yes, I mean, it does feel like with the American heavyweight broadcasting arm behind the Ten Network and Paramount Plus these days, that chance is not, you know, fool's gold these days. I mean, one of the initiatives that Ten are bringing in is the simultaneous Saturday night fixture, something a little bit different. Feels a little bit old school for those of us who've been watching sport for a long time to actually have two games on at the same time where you can keep on an eye on both. I mean, I guess the pessimist says it could cannibalise viewership, but on the other hand, it's not all about the fans in the stadiums. It's about giving that richer experience to someone on the couch.
Well, that's right. And also, you know, I think we've probably become a little bit spoiled in this country by expecting to be able to see every A-League live and exclusive from go to woe. Now, you know, a few people have been saying, oh, you know, if there's two simultaneous games, I'm not going to be able to watch the other one. Probably a lot of the same people watch the Premier League, but you can't watch 10 games simultaneously. And, you know, a lot of those games kick off simultaneously in the UK. So, you know, this is about the maturing of the competition and the maturing of our football culture in many ways. And I think, you know, what we might lose a little bit, potentially in terms of viewership, we might gain by the fact that we've got two games that are going to be kicking off on Saturday evening, which is, you know, prime time for people to actually get out and watch the games in cooler conditions than having, say, a game at or more games at 5 o'clock on a Saturday and a Sunday, which during the summer months obviously can be baking hot and, you know, people have other things to do. So I think it's a good football decision as well as an interesting broadcast one. If it doesn't work, well, you know, they can always switch back. But I think it's good to try different things. And, you know, this new TV deal offers us the opportunity to do that because Ten, as I say, are very much invested in it and want to make it work.
Simon, Daniel Sturridge is the biggest name we've had in the A-League for a little while, but given his injury history and I think the general positivity around the rest of the league, he doesn't seem to be carrying the weight of expectation that we've seen of other marquees in previous seasons. And I think this is really healthy. It doesn't seem like he needs to score 25 goals or else the season will suffer. It'd be nice if he could, but if you think back to big marquees of the past, Del Piero, Heskey, David Villa, there's almost a desperation that they succeed for the rest of the league. But I think with Sturridge, it feels a bit more considered and a bit healthier. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, you also can't sell a league on one player, and I think we've probably learned that in the past as well. You know, I remember when Keisuke Honda came here, great player though he is and was, you know, it was all about can he put bums on seats? Now, maybe with Daniel being over in the West, you know, it's probably escaped a little bit of the attention over here on the Eastern Seaboard as well, which might have something to do with it. But it looks great to see him here. There's no doubt that he's got a tremendous pedigree, played for some huge clubs, Man City, Chelsea, Liverpool, played for England in major tournaments. If he's fit, and obviously there's a question mark against that, he's not played a lot of football, as you rightly say, the last 12, 18 months, and his head's in the right place, then, you know, I have no doubt that he'll do very good things in this competition. And I think he'll probably put a few extra bums on seats as well, certainly over in the West in the early days, he will. It's good to have a little bit of magic dust here and there. I'd personally like to see one or two more around the league, but you know, maybe that's not possible at this point in time. But you're right in saying that there doesn't seem to be the same sort of desperation for him to succeed, which puts intolerable pressure on one player. I mean, as I say, you can't sell a competition on one footballer. It has to be a collective effort. So, I mean, he's very welcome in Australia. It's great to see him. I hope he does fantastically well. Hope he drives the numbers upwards. But if he doesn't, well, you know, we'll be okay.
In terms of recruitment around the rest of the league, we've seen a reduction in the age of foreign recruits over the past couple of seasons. And this season, the Newcastle Jets and Central Coast Mariners have gone really young. They've taken it to a new level altogether. A couple of years ago, I think that would have been an issue. We would have had people sort of kicking and screaming that they're taking these young players, these young foreigners are taking the opportunities from our young Australians. But we've seen over the past couple of years that there's now ample opportunity for young Aussies if they're good enough. So do you think this is a maturation of not only the recruitment, but also the Australian football public in terms of how we're considering not only our young players but foreigners coming to our league and growing their careers here as well?
Yeah, look, you might be right on that. Obviously, you know, a lot depends again on how they perform. You know, if they turn out to be Mario Jardel, well, they'll probably be labelled a waste of money, and rightly so. If they turn out to be Thomas Broich, well, it'll be a welcome acquisition to the or addition to the competition. You know, it remains to be seen on that. This is the beauty of this part of the year, just before the kickoff. You look at the recruits around the country and think, I don't know too much about him. Is he going to be good or is he not? And that's sort of the joy of it, really. You know, because they're not necessarily big names. I mean, I did the FFA Cup tie involving the Central Coast Mariners last weekend up in Mudgee against Blacktown City. And, you know, I looked at the CV of Benny Nkololo and thought, oh, blimey, he's not played at a very good level. But actually, he had a decent game and he ended up scoring the winner. Very tidy finish too. So you just never know how they're going to adapt. And, you know, as I say, that's the beauty of the competition. But each team needs a good blend of young locals, experienced locals, and foreign talent. And the team that gets that combination right between the three areas, it's normally the ones that are going to be most successful and the ones that we enjoy watching. So, yeah, bring it on and let's find out who's the Jardels and who's the Broiches.
And Simon, before we let you go, I mean, there's any number of questions that we could ask you as the final one. I mean, the interest in Josh Cavallo internationally, how will that play out? Will Josh step up another level? Listening to a recent podcast, he sounds like he's absolutely bursting at the seams to showcase what he's capable of. Obviously, the Central Coast Mariners post Alan Stajic and Will MacArthur do well in their second season in the competition, and Melbourne City, can they back it up and go to another level? But the elephant in the room, of course, is the Melbourne Victory, and there's just so many other rivalries in this competition that rely on Victory being competitive, and when they were at the bottom of the ladder, the Sydney FCs and the Adelaide Uniteds and the local derbies, they just sucked of oxygen. What's your expectation of what Tony Popovich can bring to the table, and are we going to see what used to be a bit of a traditional thing for Victory, where they, you know, rise and fall season on season? Hopefully it happens again for people who follow the Dark Blues.
Well, look, I think you can say the same to a lesser extent for Western Sydney Wanderers in this neck of the woods as well. You know, they haven't made the finals the last 4 years, and for a long time, you know, their success drove the rivalry in Sydney as well. And it's exactly the same scenario in Melbourne. Victory, obviously coming from a long way back, wouldn't spoon us last year. But Tony Popovich, let's be honest, he ain't going to settle for that. I like the look of his squad, with the caveat that when I looked at Victory's squad 12 months ago, I thought, yeah, they'll go okay. Rudy Justed looked like a good signing. Jacob Butterfield, Callum McManaman, I thought they're decent acquisitions, and they were awful. So you just never can tell. But I think with Popovich at the helm, you can be assured that they will not finish bottom. I think they'll be top four as a bare minimum. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they're challenging for silverware, because that's just what Tony Popovich does. There are some question marks. You know, is Matt Spranovic ready to play football again? He hasn't played for over 12 months. On paper, he's a fantastic player. Popovich also hasn't always got his foreign imports in terms of strikers right. You remember Dino Kressinger, Francesco Piovaccari at the Western Sydney Wanderers. Didn't fire at all. They've signed Francesco Margiotta, the Italian. Again, looks good on paper. Is he going to score the goals for them? Can Rojas and Cruz stay fit along with Economides? If all those things fall into place, I think Victory will have a very, very good season, and I'm utterly confident that they will not be bottom again this year, because that's what Tony Popovich does.
Well, we've been noting down some of your predictions, Simon, and in about 6 months' time, we'll invite you back and we'll review them. Hopefully, you're
thanks.
Right. Because, well, at least this is with no Victory bias whatsoever, because I don't follow them. But, you know, similar to what you say about the Western Sydney Wanderers, not only does the league need both teams to be competitive, but obviously from a broadcasting point of view, they bring eyeballs to the television as well.
Yeah,
so
it helps.
So hopefully. Yeah, it does. Hey, Simon, mate, we love the fact that you're in the hot seat, and we'll get to listen to you again throughout the coming season. Good luck, enjoy it, and we'll talk to you again real soon as the season gets underway, and hopefully delivers some entertainment for us all.
I hope so too. Thanks very much, guys, and for all your support over the last 12, 18 months as well.
It's always there, Simon Hill. A great man. Okay, stick around. Edge is going to be back. We're going to talk more Socceroos and Matildas after the break on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. Time to talk Socceroos, Matildas, other international players. Well, we know Edge had a conversation with a few luminaries after the match in Sharjah, so he's with us again. We'll have a yarn about that too. But before we do, our very good friends at Chemist Warehouse want to let you know that this Christmas, you can beat Santa to the Christmas tree and get all your shopping done early, of course, at Chemist Warehouse. They've got a range of big brand fragrances that are sure to make the perfect gift. So go woody and aromatic with Calvin Klein Euphoria for Men. 100 mils, only $39.99. That is an absolute steal. Of course, you can't go wrong with Issey Miyake for Men. 125 mil for the exotics, $69.99. Men's Secret Weapon, Hugo Boss Bottled Knight. How evocative is that name? 100 mils for $49.99. And for that legendary scent, there's the Mont Blanc Legend 100 mils, just $59.99. So get on in to Chemist Warehouse. Edge, you won't be able to buy it duty-free any cheaper when you're travelling the world as you do these days. Back again in your usual haunts. Just got to get to Chemist Warehouse, where the great savings are every single day. All right, gentlemen. Willem, will you fire off? Edge is sitting there. He's he was there at Sharjah. Why don't we sort of you lead the questioning on what he saw.
Michael, what did you make of your first experience in a little while in and around the Socceroo setup? Not in the very inner sanctum, but as one of the few travelling fans who had the privilege of being there in Sharjah, what did you sense in terms of the mood off the back of a second disappointing match in a row?
Well, I don't think you can hide away from the fact that they were just disappointing, and the coaches were feeling it. Obviously, the players in a COVID bubble, they take that very, very seriously. So I got a chance to, with my work, obviously around the World Cup stuff I do, I had a meeting after the game, and we talked a little bit to the coaches. Look, at the end of the day, they're doing the best they can in an environment, but they're not going to shy away from the disappointment of losing those two games. But they, as you do with them, when you're involved in elite football and you have a bad result, you've got to look at it closely, but you've also got to move on and focus on the next opportunity, and the next opportunity is Vietnam. So I think, you and I were talking through the game on WhatsApp as we were going backwards and forwards, and, we were lamenting the positions that the two wide fullbacks were getting in, but they just weren't damaging enough. They had a lot of ball without any pressure. China was sitting off Ryan Grant and Aziz Bage, but they couldn't make it count. And that was one of the big issues for them. It's just worth noting that it was a very slow game, and that was the pitch had a lot to do with that. The pitch was very soft. It had a lot of water leading up to the game because it needed it, apparently. But that's the other thing to mention. The Middle Eastern conditions can be a bit tricky. Each pitch is a bit different depending on, how the various curators look after it. No, I think that probably suited China to a certain extent. But I don't think they really had any significant chances, China, until after they scored the penalty, when they got a little bit of energy from drawing level with the Socceroos. So I think there's some question marks over formation. And I think, Rob, I know we love Jackson Irvine, but he'll be very disappointed with the opportunity that he missed against South Saudi Arabia. And again, the opportunity missed against China. I know he'd have to be disappointed with those two missed chances in big World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, no, fair play. We love Jackson, and we've watched him with interest since he was a little boy, and we've seen him do some great things for the Socceroos. He's been a stalwart in the team, but there's no question about it. He was in the pole position to score in both games, and it would have made a massive difference in both games, even if he had have got one of those opportunities. So yeah, he'll be gutted that didn't happen, and you know, like everyone else in the squad and around the squad, just waiting with a great hunger to rectify what they weren't able to get done. All right, well, you've got a lot more news, so why don't you pile onto that and see where that takes us.
Hello, Rob. Let's start with Socceroos and Matilda Central for the Green and Gold Army. Not long now until packages are on sale for the Qatar 2022 World Cup, which starts in exactly 1 year from Sunday. There will be options to feast on as much football as possible or take in the best of the Middle East. So make sure you've signed up to the mailing list at ggatravel.com.au. Michael, can you put a little bit more meat on the bone regarding those travel packages?
Well, absolutely. There's going to be a fantastic World Cup immersion experience for people that want to see a game of football every day in Doha and base yourselves. We've secured a fantastic little property right near the Souk, where you'll be able to get some fantastic Lebanese and Middle Eastern and Arabic cuisine. You'll be able to go.
You've had me drooling with those clips you've been sending, Ed. There's nothing like that authentic flavour when you're in the country that is the originator of the food, is there?
No, that's right, and you get to know the differences of you know, Syrian tabbouleh and Lebanese tabbouleh and the different flavours associated with vine leaves and all that sort of stuff. So it's a great cuisine. If you do like Arabic cuisine, nowhere better than Dubai and Doha to enjoy that. But obviously, we've also then got a golf highlights program for those people who just want to see the Socceroos and catch some of other tourism highlights in the region, in Oman and also in the UAE. So there's lots to look forward to. The World Cup is, as I've said previously on the previous shows, it's building momentum and excitement. And now with Iran and Saudi Arabia joining Qatar, you know, absolutely, you know, rock solid in terms of qualification. The Middle East is going to be alive. And don't forget, we've got the Arab Cup over the next 3 or 4 weeks, which is the test event for the World Cup. And that'll be an interesting little exercise to see how everything goes with the new stadiums and transport, but also the football.
To our Matildas playing abroad, we are over the midway point of the group stage of the UEFA Women's Champions League, and Arsenal have edged towards the knockouts. They've enjoyed a second successive win over HB Koga with Caitlin Ford on the score sheet. However, in the league, Arsenal have had their point atop the table, cut to just 1 point, having played out a draw with Tottenham this week. Elie Carpenter and Lyon have had a slip up in the Champions League against Bayern Munich. They went down 1-0. Their lead atop Group D is now just 2 points, but domestically, they had a huge week. They dismissed title rivals PSG 6-1. So when the top of the table beats second, 6-1, perhaps it's not the most competitive league, but that doesn't matter to Ellie. She'll just go on sweeping up silverware, and she did have a hand in one of the goals, laying on an assist for the fifth. My apologies need to go out to Tessa Tamplin. She'd slipped my radar over the past couple of weeks, but she's been playing full matches for Servette in the Women's Champions League. They lost 7-0 to Chelsea last week, and Tessa could well feature in the return leg this week. Michael, tell us a little bit more about Tessa and her work in the, well, what was the W League, now the A League Women's, over the past couple of seasons and her graduation to Europe.
Well, she's one of those players that has elected to play in a lesser standard competition in Europe because she has a Dutch passport, which allows her to do that. And good on Tessa. She's making her way. The club is a very serious club. As those people who know Swiss football, they actually play in multiple competitions. So she's playing a lot of football. And yeah, and it'll just be interesting if she can gain a bit of momentum in her career, and whether the Netherlands might come knocking, or whether the Matildas Brains Trust are giving a bit of a look to her. But that's a good choice for a young footballer who wants to make the most out of their career. She's probably just outside the fringe of the Matildas, and young players who are on the fringe of the Matildas need to make those decisions carefully. But I think she's made a good one, and she's playing all the time, and benefiting from that, no doubt. But what about, I think Sam Kerr has signed an extension to her contract there, Willem.
Yeah, she certainly has. I was going to say it's been a big week for Sam, but that's nothing out of the norm. It usually is. She has signed on for another two seasons, and that's a bit of a no-brainer. She described it as Chelsea. She's also gone to the top of the Golden Boot standing in the league, scoring her seventh for the season in a big 4-0 win over Manchester City. So they are the team breathing down the neck of Arsenal. And over in France, Mary Fowler started for Montpellier with goals, two goals off the bench in a 3-0 win. That's taken her tally to 6 for the season for club and country and helped the side climb to 8, so they're mid-table there in France. Let's go to the FFA Cup, Rob. Melbourne City, Central Coast and MacArthur have all advanced to the last 16 over the past week, while Western United won their playoff to join the round of 32. Next Wednesday, Melbourne Victory and Perth Glory will play their playoff, while Sydney Olympic and Sydney FC and Cooma Tigers and Appia Leichhardt will meet for a place in the last 16. Gold Coast Knights, Adelaide Olympic, Wollongong Wolves and Hume City are the sides that have advanced so far to the last 16 and are still in the competition. It's been a confused season, but it's also been a very, it's been a season in which they've done the absolute best they can, Robin. There's some real momentum starting to build around the FFA Cup. Melbourne City went and dispatched South Melbourne 3-0. At Lakeside Stadium on Friday night, but it was still an awesome atmosphere to see two sets of fans. There was a real momentum and it felt like the FFA Cup was back on Friday night, I thought.
Yeah, it did, didn't it, with the crowds back in the stadiums and those, you know, local potential giant-killing clubs that are playing against the big A-League clubs back involved as well. So, you know, these are all those signs of normality. Well, we're not entirely post-COVID, but in the gradual post-COVID world that we're emerging to and seeing people getting back to the habits that they love, and the FFA Cup is definitely one of those. So, yeah, that's a great story, Willem.
Who was the culprit from Newcastle who did that wonderful back pass? I must admit, in one of the offices I've been working, they had the local football channel on 24 hours a day, and there was an AFC update, and that made the highlight reel of the week in football. The back pass that wasn't a back pass and cost Newcastle a pretty awkward and embarrassing goal. Who was that culprit?
You've actually got me on that one, Michael. I'm not sure. I did take my girlfriend away for a well-deserved weekend before the A-League kicked off, so I didn't see a great deal of the action, just caught the highlights. It was an absolute howler opening the door for the new Serbian striker to score his maiden goal for Western United, but you've caught me out. Well done. 1-0 to you. Rob, there is one more I want to get to. I'm going to throw to Michael on it. It's because there is a huge clash being played in the Middle East this week in Saudi Arabia. It is the Champions League final. Al Hilal will be playing Pohang Steelers. These are the two biggest, most successful sides in the competition's history, having both won it three times, although Al Hilal have lost a further four finals. Michael, Alex Grant, he's at Pohang, and he could become just the second Aussie to play in the final for a non-Australian club. I'll try and get you one back here. Can you tell me who the first was?
The first was Sasha Ogdenoski.
No, that was a Dorothy Dixer. Back to you, Rob.
Okay, and I noticed that that you didn't bother asking me about that back pass, because I concede that despite my best efforts with Dr. Google, I do not know the answer to that. And if you do know, send it on our social media and we will acknowledge you next week. Well done, Willem. Okay, Edge, you take a break back to your room service or whatever movie it is you're streaming in your 24 hours of isolation. We're going to talk to Paul Williams from the Asian game next, and you will join us for stoppage time at the back end when we get Derek on the line and start talking a little more deeply about some of those other confederations, Europe, South America, Africa, etc., in terms of World Cup qualifying. But Paul Williams from the Asian game next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box. And well, this past few weeks, as fans of the national men's side have gone from bad to worst, we had 9 points on offer and ended up with 2. We were at one stage hoping we'd leapfrog Saudi Arabia. Now we're battling in third spot, and our fate is out of our hands for Qatar next year. A man who knows all about the Asian qualifying, in fact, the Asian game, because he does run the Asian game podcast. Paul Williams joins us to have a yarn about all that. How are you, Paul?
Good, mate. How are you going yourself?
Oh, mate, I was going better before I got up in the middle of the night to watch Australia draw against China. It just feels like a flashback to two decades ago, where we'd find new and inventive ways to hamstring our efforts to get to the World Cups. And there's just no reason really why we should be in this position. I mean, that point in Japan in Saitama really was there banked, and we went for the win. Okay, if we had have got it, everyone's a hero. Against Saudi Arabia in that rainy environment in Sydney, okay, we had the bad luck of Harry Sutar going down. But against China, to draw one all, admittedly in Sharjah, is that good enough, Paul?
Clearly it's not. No, because we desperately needed the 3 points. And China have been pretty poor this campaign, and that's probably putting it politely. And they're suffering through issues of their own. I mean, the players in China have been living in a bubble for the better part of almost 18 months now, when you include, you know, the Chinese Super League all of last season and the first part of this season as well. It was all conducted in bubbles. They've been living on the road as the national team for the better part of, you know, 3 or 4 months now. And that takes its toll. And you're probably seeing that in some of the performances. The Brazilian Alan left straight after the game to go back to Brazil. The coach, Li Tie, said he just couldn't handle living in the bubble anymore, and has gone straight back to Brazil, and won't go back to China to finish the Chinese Super League season. excuse me. I think he just needs a break and needs a refresh. And there's probably a lot of players in the Chinese side like that. So when you consider that the struggles that they're having, Australia's performed pretty well over in the Gulf, with our own home matches that we had over there. You know, we should have gone over there and been expecting to take the 3 points, especially when we took the lead in the first half. They're a side that that we should be beating, you know, based on the form of this campaign so far. So to come away with only a point, it really does set us on the back foot now. And we've got, you know, difficult assignments coming up next year. Japan at home, Saudi Arabia away, even Oman away is a tricky encounter, as Japan saw as well. So we've given ourselves some work to do.
Yeah, we have, and I guess we all, as pundits, have to be conscious not to go in too hard, because it all could turn around and we end up in Qatar and things go well. So, on the one hand, you could be the great critic and pick apart everything that's gone wrong, only to find that you end up with egg on your face. But it seems that there's a lot of questions around the pointy end and Jamie McLaren, prolific in the A-League. Why can't he get a start in any of these matches? People are asking the questions of Graham Arnold as to what is his logic behind this.
Yeah, and you've got to think, if you're calling Jamie McLaren up, especially with Adam Taggart out injured, if you're calling Jamie McLaren up and you're not really giving him any game time, then essentially what's the point of calling him up in the first place? Because if he's not going to play when Adam Taggart's not there, then when is he going to play? So, you know, there's rightly some questions being asked, because, you know, we saw the last campaign when we hit a tricky road bump, there was some serious questions asked of Ange Postecoglou, particularly by a couple of pundits. And those questions should be asked again now, because, you know, we're in a very similar position where, you know, we're sitting third in the group with, you know, 4 matches to go and some tricky encounters to come up. So there should absolutely be some questions asked, because I don't think the performances, you know, right across the board, perhaps maybe aside from that first game against China, but, you know, we've struggled. And when the big tests have come, particularly against Japan and Saudi Arabia, we've failed those tests. So there should absolutely be some questions being asked, because we need to see improved performances next year. Otherwise, you know, the chances of us going to Qatar are going to greatly diminish.
Exactly. This is Box to Box. We're talking to the Asian Games. Paul Williams, listen to that podcast. It's an outstanding podcast, especially if you want to just dig a little deeper into Asian qualifying, Asian football across the J-League, K-League and the entire diaspora of Asian football. We are talking to Paul Williams. And, Willem, I know you've got a few questions pointed as well.
I do, Paul. So we are once again locked in qualifying combat with Japan, but they're not particularly, or certainly what we hear in Australia, they're not a particularly happy or settled camp themselves. Hajime Moriyasu is still the manager, and there's been lots of speculation about his performance. They took until late to overturn Oman, and they've been struggling for goals, which is usually one of their most prominent points, if you like. So is this guy proving Australia's best friend? Is he putting the handbrake on the side, or is the criticism a little bit unfair?
I think the criticism is absolutely fair. They have, a plethora of attacking talent that he's not using. And it baffles me, you know. I talked about, you know, Jamie McLaren not getting game time for Australia, and if he's not going to get game time, what's the point of calling him up? Japan had struggled in attack across this entire qualifying campaign. There'd been calls to call up Daisen Maeda, who plays for Yokohama F. Marinos, the golden boot leader in the J-League, scored 21 goals this season, has been in fantastic form, hadn't been getting called up. Finally got called up to this camp and then sat on the bench the entire time. So I don't know why you bother calling someone up if you're just going to leave them sitting on the bench when you haven't called them up previously. So guys like, you know, Daisen Maeda, Kato Mitoma came off the bench the other night and probably changed the game for Japan. But he's another one who's an incredible talent, been in fantastic form for Kawasaki before he left for Europe after the Olympics, but just, you know, wasn't getting game time. Didn't see much game time at the Olympics that was bewildering as well. Hadn't been featuring for Moriyasu. And when you consider the struggles that they'd been having in front of goals, it boggles the mind that talent like Maeda, Mitoma weren't getting game time when, you know, players like Osako and Minamino, who are good players in their own right, but are struggling for form with the national team. And Moriyasu's absolutely got the handbrake on this Japanese side. And as you said, he could be Australia's best friend, because while they've overtaken us now into second and they've got three wins on the bounce, they've been three pretty unimpressive performances, probably except for the one against Australia where they showed, I guess, more potential, but it certainly wasn't anywhere near what they're capable of. But so the question marks are still very much out about Moriyasu in Japan, but I think he's going to be sticking around for the time being, given he's got them back into the position now where they look like qualifying.
And over in Group A, things are looking a little more straightforward at the top. Iran and South Korea marching towards another World Cup. But below that, it looks like anyone's game for the moment. The UAE, Iraq, Lebanon, maybe even Syria too. Perhaps that's a little bit far-fetched. But certainly the UAE, Iraq and Lebanon are all vying for that third position. So of what you've seen, who do you think has the inside running? Because we could well come up against whoever finishes third.
Yeah, and this is probably where we need to be focusing our attention, especially because, I mean, that group's done and dusted Japan and Korea. It's not official, but they've qualified for the World Cup. They're not losing that position given the form that they're showing. So it's a battle for third now between four teams, but as you said, probably between the three. The UAE have been pretty unimpressive under Bert van Marwijk, a coach that we know well as well. And it's been disappointing because towards the end of the second phase, when he came back in to take over the reins, they were greatly improved. And you thought, okay, there's signs of improvement here. When they get going in the third round, then, you know, there's the potential for them to, you know, challenge Korea or challenge Iran if they get really going. But they've been really underwhelming. They've been hit by a few injuries, but just not playing particularly well either. So it's really tight. Lebanon are a limited side, but are doing incredibly well with the talent that they have. Ivan Hasek has come in and doing a great job in getting them very well organized and making them very difficult to beat. They almost pulled off an upset against Iran. They led 1-0 going into stoppage time. And conceded twice, once in the 91st minute and then in the 95th minute to lose that game, and then conceded, I think it was, in the 86th minute against the UAE. So, you know, they could be, you know, they could have cemented that third spot had results gone their way and they're not fallen away. So I still think the UAE's got the inside running on that one. As I said, Lebanon have been doing well, but I think they're rather limited. Iraq is as Iraq always are, they're rife with internal politics and internal divisions within that camp. I don't think it's a particularly happy camp. There's pressure on Dick Advocaat, who's come in. There's been some fierce criticism of him from Justin Meram, who announced his retirement, I think, after the first game, and had some pretty stinging criticism for Dick Advocaat as well. So, unfortunately, they've got the talent, but as is often the case with Iraq, they're rife with internal politics. So I think the UAE's got the internal running on the inside running on that one now. And as I said, that's where we should be focusing our attention, because if we finish third, then that's who we're going to come up against.
Shifting our attention to the Asian Champions League, the final's going to be played in the early hours of Wednesday morning, our time. Al Hilal against Pohang, both three-time winners. It's been a long old lead-in. We've still got another 6 days. What are the major storylines around this one? And Al Hilal, your favourites at home?
There's like enormous favourites, probably $1 favourites. You'd have them with the bookies because Pohang have been, I mean, Pohang's form in the Champions League has been very, very good, but their domestic form hasn't been. They've lost three of their last four. They're in the, sort of the relegation half of the K-League. They're not at any risk of being relegated, but they're in the bottom half of the table now. But there's a lot of hallmarks of 2014. So you've got Al Hilal that go in as heavy favourites facing a team that are the absolute underdogs in black and white hoops. I mean, it is 2014 all over again, and Al Hilal will be, you know, having nightmares of 2014, but surely they couldn't slip up again. I've got them as enormous favourites. They're in fantastic form. They've been probably the best side of the entire competition, so they deserve to win. They've got, you know, seven or eight players from the Saudi national team who come in form, full of confidence, given their own form with the national team. They're playing at home at the King Fahd Stadium. The AFC announced this week it'll be 100% capacity. So you're looking at 65,000-70,000 people all supporting Al Hilal. It is all set up for them to win another Champions League. It'll be their second in 3 years and cement their spot as the dominant force in Asian football. So I'd be very surprised if come Wednesday morning they're not lifting the crown. But as we know from when the Wanderers did it in football, just never say never.
There's no one who knows more about Asian football in this country than you, my friend. So we're always grateful for your time.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it.
That old Paul Williams from The Asian Game. Do yourself a favour and have a listen to the podcast. It's easy to find, and you will be back again for more. Okay, stick around. Derek is up next. Stoppage time. There's lots more qualifying. Talk about slippery slopes and banana peel qualifying. Italy, what's going on there? I know Derek will be crowing that Scotland are in the qualifying stages. He's up next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving, and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box, and as usual these days in our podcast editions of Box to Box, the fourth official gives us plenty of time to go through everything we want to and all the things we haven't. But if there's one thing, or certainly could have led the show, is the other international confederations of World Cup qualifying. There's some massive stories. Derek joins us for the first time this week, and I guess, Derek, surely you want to lead with the heroics of Scotland.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. And Scotland, of course, finishing second in their group. It's the first time they've done that for some time. And they did that by stunning Denmark to get a home playoff spot. They beat them 2-0, got goals from Suter, and Shea Adams sent the Tartan Army into dreamland. And now they've got a home spot in what is a playoff group of death. There are plenty of strong teams in there. Scotland could play the likes of Portugal, Sweden, Italy, of course Wales are in there, North Macedonia, no mugs, Poland. It's going to be tough, Rob. So I think Scotland should celebrate the fact that they've come this far. Of course, it would be great to seal the deal and get to Qatar, but I feel like they've really kind of built on their last campaign where they qualified for the Euros, and they've really built on something here.
And Wales as well, that's a great story there with that Gareth Bale. Admittedly, Belgium had six of their best on the sideline, but to get the result that they needed against the best team in the world, that deserves massive credit.
Not a shabby result at all. I think it would have looked ominous as Kevin De Bruyne scored a very Kevin De Bruyne type goal, kind of coolly slotting a ball in from outside the box, and looked pretty ominous for Wales. But as you said, they were shorn of Aaron Ramsey, who had limited game time across these periods. Of course, scored some crucial earlier goals against Belarus earlier in the week. And of course, Gareth Bale didn't play. A lot of people saying that Gareth Bale should retire from club football to solely focus on his international career, which would be a thing. But yeah, look, good from Wales. They also get a home qualifying playoff, and again they will go into that pot with the teams that I've just mentioned. Of course, Portugal being one of them. They were stunned by Serbia. Mitrovic, of course, the villain the last time out for Serbia, as he failed to put them through into the Euros against Scotland last time. But he was the hero this time, and Ronaldo and Portugal will head to the playoffs, as will Italy, crashing back down to earth, I suppose, having won the Euros. They've been denied by, by Switzerland. Switzerland probably a team that should be get more praise than they do. They continually qualify for these big tournaments. They beat Bulgaria, and of course Italy went and drew 0-0 in sort of lowly Northern Ireland, with all due respect to them. So Mancini's men will also have to do the tough stuff to get there.
Hey, come on, Derek, what about you just typical Anglo sort of view of the world, lead out the Eastern bloc countries in your review there. You didn't mention Czech Republic. You didn't mention North Macedonia. You didn't mention Russia. You didn't mention Ukraine or Turkey. They're all chances to I mean, Russia's better than Wales. Czech Republic's better than Wales. Can we give some of the Eastern Bloc countries a bit of love, please, Derek?
Oh, certainly. I don't think Wales or Scotland are a shoo-in to qualify at all. Of course, Russia dumped into the playoffs in what looked like a turgid game against Croatia, in some of the worst rain and waterlogged pitches you've ever seen, and a very, very comedic own goal. Of course, Ukraine, as you pointed out, they're in that playoff group of death as well. So they'll be tough to beat. Look, I think, Edge, to be honest with you, I think it's tough. We haven't mentioned Turkey. I brushed over Poland. Poland were excellent in England's group. England, obviously, were 26 out of 30 and two draws, yep, and all wins. You know, you can't argue with the way England are playing at the moment. But Poland kept them honest for big chunks of that, and England were all the way. I know the San Marino game came last, and luckily less said about that as a spectacle, the better. Good to see Emil Smith-Rowe as an Arsenal fan getting on the score sheet. Good to see Tammy Abraham scoring. Good to see Conor Gallagher getting a start against San Marino. But yeah, Poland were excellent in that, and will certainly trouble people in this in this qualification. But what about you, Edge? There's all sorts going on. I mean, have you been keeping tabs on Latin America? The next two, the only other two teams outside of Europe that have gone through, I think, are Brazil and Argentina. Is that right?
I have been keeping tabs on that. The Brazilians and Argentinians are way in front. Argentina set a new national mark by qualifying for the World Cup with still five matches to spare. So they can put Messi in the rack, can't they? They can rest their big guys for the rest of these qualifications. But, the big one is Ecuador, aren't they? They're sitting in the qualification zone at the moment. Bolivia is still only a little way away, but they're down the bottom of the table. But, yeah, there's some twists and turns to go in that before the end of the end of their sort of round of matches. And at the moment, Chile, Uruguay look like missing out.
So it was a disastrous window for Uruguay. They lost to Argentina, understandable, but to Bolivia, certainly not ideal. So they've lost four on the bounce, so they've slipped down to seventh. It was a really good window for Peru. They're also in that sort of middle-of-the-pack dogfight. They got their act together, so they had a 3-0 win against Bolivia and a 2-1 win over Venezuela. So they're up to fifth, but along with Chile for Peru and Uruguay, it is certainly a scrap. Ecuador, they are looking a good thing in third, Michael, and remembering it is the top four from South America that go through, and then the fifth goes into the barrel, as you called it earlier in the program, the Intercontinental Playoff.
Yeah, and we just don't want South America, because imagine a one-off game against Peru or Uruguay or Chile. I really can't see that going well.
No. I'm going to jump in on Denmark, guys. I know we're jumping around the world a bit, but it's just been reminded, heading back to Europe. Denmark, I mean, amazing, really. Just thinking all the way back to, Christian Eriksen collapsing on the pitch in Copenhagen, what they then did subsequently in the Euros, what they've then done in this World Cup qualifying campaign. And I know that they lost the last game to Scotland there. They didn't need to win. They were already through. But they were virtually, exemplary all the way through. And they released this statement yesterday, which I just thought was extraordinary, where they've made some commitments about how they're going to interact with the Qatar World Cup, you know, some quite, you know, some would say a kind of woke kind of press release, so they're not going to participate in anything apart from the matches, you know, in terms of promotion of themselves there. None of their major sponsors are going to participate with them, you know, so they're going to forego actually commercial upside, or at least their sponsors are going to forego their commercial upside by not participating. It's a bit of a bold statement, Ed. You've come from Qatar, you know, you've got to straddle both sides of the divide here. You're taking groups of people out to Qatar, you want it to be a great tournament, and then you know you've also got to look at what Denmark are saying, and that they want to make a stand in their own way. Do you have any respect for what they're doing?
Well, I do, but also I think I'd take the point of view that sport and politics, in the context of this, you know, it's not a good mix, and it's a very sensitive issue because there is information on both sides of the debate that is questioned and put into doubt. So my perspective on this is that it's really simple, and I've said it before on the show, Derek, that the only way to improve the situation in the world across many issues is engagement. The same for the relationship between Australia and China at the moment. Unless people get together and talk and understand each other's cultures and values and be informed about that, you know, changes can't happen. So I'm not supportive of any organisation that looks to boycott or put restrictions to penalise or to press their point of view. I think at the end of the day, I think people need to sit down and talk to each other. And just by holding the FIFA World Cup in Qatar, it's shed a global spotlight on the issues for the workers. And, you know, and I've made it my business to go and talk to some and have a look at where they live and what they do. And, you know, so I think I'm relatively informed. And I think the side of the argument that Denmark's coming from, the Qataris would say that they're probably not recognising the changes they've made to their law, the advancements they've made in standards and conditions for the workers, and I think that's a worthy rebuttal to what Denmark's doing. But I'm personally not really in favour. I respect what they're doing, but I'm not really in favour of it. I'd rather see people fully participate in the event and serious engagement that allows people to learn from each other, and situations like what we're talking about, you know, workers' rights, are improved. I mean, at the end of the day, Qatar's in the spotlight, aren't they? But Saudi Arabia, UAE at the moment, Iran, they're probably escaping the spotlight, aren't they, for similar issues?
Yeah, I would agree with that, Edge. Speaking of controversy, Willem, there was controversy in the African side of the draw for Bafana. Tell us more.
Yeah, there certainly was. We might have buried the lead a little bit, Derek, because we're at the very end of the show, and this is possibly, on a global sense, the biggest story of the week. So last week I set it up that in the African qualifiers, they've got their 10 groups of four, and the top team from each group goes into their last 10, and then they're drawn into groups of two, and that's how they get their five. So South Africa, Bafana, and Ghana, it was all to play for between those two. Daniel Amati, who plays for Leicester City, was awarded the softest, and if you go and have a look at it, it is the softest of penalties by Senegalese referee Mojet Undayi, and Ghana, off the back of that, advanced by the very slim margin of goals scored. But the Bafana, the SAFA, the South African Football Association, have blown up big time. They've claimed match manipulation, match fixing, corruption and bribery, and FIFA have taken it very seriously. They've said, yep, we see that. We're going to put that before our disciplinary committee, and that will be before the committee on November the 23rd. So next week, South Africa want the match replayed, and there's a little bit of history with this referee Ndai. 5 years ago, he refereed the Mamelodi Sundowns, who are a South African club side in the African Champions League. There were rumours and rumblings that he was up to no good there as well. So this is a massive story. Geez, to have a World Cup qualifier replayed, that still seems like a long way away. I'm not sure it'll happen, but yeah, certainly a very big story that FIFA have taken seriously. We'll go to the rest of the African qualifiers because we do have at least 9 of our final 10. So the qualified sides are Algeria, Tunisia, Nigeria, Cameroon, Egypt, who have gotten there without Mo Salah scoring a single goal, Mali, who are perhaps the surprise packet, Senegal and Morocco, and DR Congo, Democratic People's Republic of Congo, who squeezed past Benin at the death as well. So who missed out? Well, Benin, they led for most of the group, and they are aggrieved at a penalty that was handed to Congo in their final match too. And the biggest side to miss out, Le Cote d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, they'll miss for the second straight World Cup, having enjoyed that golden run and with a golden generation from 2006 to 2014. And what is most tasty, Derek, here is that those playoffs won't be played until March, after the African Cup of Nations. So that certainly makes that an intriguing tournament indeed.
Certainly does, Willem. Always, you know, there seems to be something to this game though. So that this South Africa game, it just seems, you know, there's also some alleged betting and corruption around it too. So they really do have to get to the bottom of that, you know. Ghana, of course, a powerhouse of African football, but so are South Africa, the fabulous hosts of the World Cup a few years ago. And, you know, it was a horrendous decision, as you said, and, you know, justice certainly wasn't done, Willem.
No, it wasn't. And there's just one more group, one more confederation that deserve a bit of love on the program this week, and that is CONCACAF. They're the top three qualifier, and the fourth goes into the confederation playoff. And with 8 of 14 match days down, it is Canada with 16 points who lead the USA with 15, and Mexico with 14. Canada had wins over Costa Rica and Mexico this window, just the one World Cup appearance in 1986. So that's brewing as possibly one of the feel-good stories of the Qatar World Cup. It does look very much like it will be Canada, Mexico, and the USA to advance. In fourth position, it's Panama, who hold a 5-point lead from fifth. Perhaps only Costa Rica could challenge. So perhaps Panama on the path for Australia to the Qatar World Cup if things go poorly, Derek. But I believe, just to wrap, you've got a comment on the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, the 30-person or 30-man shortlist has been released. And it's always this kind of... A little bit funny looking at these because, you know, there are some really, really good names that you'd expect here. So Erling Braut Haaland, of course, is there. Karim Benzema, who's just been in electric form, is there. Robert Lewandowski, Kylian Mbappe are there. And, you know, you would like to think that they would be amongst the favourites and certainly the form players in Europe. But, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo is also there, as is Lionel Messi. And look, you know, again, you just have to look at that and go, you know, there's just been some lack of that imagination in the short list. Sam Kerr?
She's there, yeah, 100%.
I'm just looking at the list that I copied and pasted from a website. And they all seem to be male players, Rob. I don't see her there. There's Kane, Kante. Oh yeah, no, absolutely no. Sorry, I wasn't referring to that one. But happy for you to comment on that in a moment, Rob. Obviously, Mo Salah. Sorry, Rob, I did miss him. But then there's some curious names as well. So I don't know what Raheem Sterling's doing there. Like, he's been in absolutely abysmal form for Manchester City over the last year. Mason Mount's an interesting shout, as is Phil Foden. You know, getting in there too. I just wonder, you know, where do they make these lists from, and do they just, I don't know, do they just sit down the pub and they just drink a lot of beer and then they just have to try and remember the names of players and they put them down? I don't know, but I suggest that Cristiano Ronaldo will be there, as Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi will be there for all time, even when they're long 6 foot in the ground.
And Edge, of course, the women's Ballon d'Or, Sam Kerr, the likes of Peniel Harder, Ellen White, Fran Kirby, Jennifer Hermoso. I mean, there's 20 in all, and Sam's riding it up to her neck for a chance to win that prestigious award. So, Michael, you go back to your room service. Enjoy whatever football you can find on however many international television services that you have in your hotel room there.
I will, Rob. But I just want to mention to Willem that Panama is on 14 points. They actually have a pretty good draw. So that fourth spot could be Mexico or the USA. Imagine if Australia played the USA in a playoff to make the World Cup. ScoMo. We're the high ranking team, so we'd be able to probably host that at home. ScoMo, he'd be having
ScoMo
a great.
ScoMo would be out in force in a green and gold scarf.
The chest would be pumping out. He'd be invite the Joe would come down with his aviators on, and they could explain the rules to each other. Rob, couldn't they? Do you reckon they know the rules?
Yeah, no, somehow not, but we know Scotty from marketing, he'd find a way to put a spin on it, and Joe Fanning, I don't even know whether he would know what shape the ball was, to be perfectly frank. Edge, we'll talk to you next week, hopefully.
You certainly will. Have a great week, and to the listeners out there, don't give up on the Socceroos just yet. We've got a big January, February and March ahead of us next year. I think it's going to go down to the wire, and there'll be lots of excitement, probably a few disappointments, but I think we're going to get there.
Oh, Edge, I hope you're right, mate. After all of the pain, we're just so used to qualifying these days. So we thought it was over, but it's come back to haunt us. Well, thank you for another great week. Well done.
Thank you, Rob. Looking forward to a huge start of the A-League men's competition and a big season ahead.
And Derek, I'm sure you are. You've got your green and black kit out for Western United and your season membership all sorted.
Oh, well in advance. The gold tier package is already booked in.
Well done. And Damien, thank you for pressing the buttons. And as every great podcast knows, you need an impresario of the highest order when it comes to putting a podcast together to make it sound as good as it possibly can. There's no way we would sound as good as we do without Damien making sure that it all works out together. And, well, of course, there's no way we'd get this thing off the road at all if you weren't listening. So thank you again for listening. And we hope you've enjoyed the show again this week and that you will join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.